Welcome to the Liberators Podcast, a podcast designed to promote physical, psychological, spiritual, and financial freedom. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Liberators Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, attorney Wesley J. Pluvios Phillip. He grew up in Washington Heights in Albany, New York. He is of Haitian and Dominican descent. Whether guiding large corporations or small businesses, his goal is to garner the best results for his clients. He gained experience in the Dallas County of Justice of the Peace, Precinct 1, and as a clerk for the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Missouri, where he worked on a variety of civil litigation issues dealing with state and federal law. Additionally, he worked as a summer intern for the second largest personal injury firm in Texas, where he drafted petitions, motions to amend, and assisted with depositions and trial. His experience and zeal for building relationships in and out of the office lends to his ability to produce results for clients. Prior to practicing law in 2017, Wesley graduated from Xavier University of Louisiana, majoring in public health with a double minor in biology and math. Additionally, he was a student athlete there on an athletic scholarship. Following his time at Xavier, he attended Thurgood Marshall School of Law, where he graduated in the class of 2020. He is currently barred in Missouri at the state and federal level, Kansas federal court, and Texas. When it comes to the practice of law, he believes in forging a space to promote and provide equity to attorneys of color. In his spare time, if feasible, he enjoys traveling, and he believes that as a young professional, it is imperative to garner experiences through the realms of life which bring you joy. As a young attorney, he is focused on growing his practice, being a connector for those in need of legal assistance, and creating everlasting memories. Please join me in welcoming, again, a very special guest, my brother, attorney Wesley J. Pluvios Phillip. How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Thank you for having me on the podcast. Like I've told you before, I've loved with you what you've been doing since day one, and I'm honored to be here today to share my story.
Absolutely, man. And I always keep things in mind. When I first started the podcast in 2019, you know, you just reached out and that meant a lot to me at the time. You know, I think you might have still been, you were still in law school. So
yeah,
it's always a blessing to see things come full circle and just see, you know, all of the great things that people are doing. And I think that that's something that definitely needs to be highlighted.
I remember reaching out and saying, all right, I'm not there yet. But give me a couple of years. I'll be there.
And we did have a conversation.
You know, yeah. I got to get there first. Let's give me some time. And I would love to join the podcast, man.
But definitely, man. And, you know, it's the first time, but it definitely won't be the last. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the conversation. Tell us, you know, today our theme will be the inner workings of becoming an attorney. And tell us a little bit about your process of becoming a lawyer.
So it was actually an interesting one, and it was atypical. So essentially, I was a bio pre-med student at Xavier for my freshman and sophomore year. After my sophomore year, I actually ended up deciding, like, I don't want to do this. You know, I really don't like chemistry. I like biology. So I switched over to public health, minored in bio, and I decided to minor in math just because I had so many math classes. I said, I got to do something with this. And I thought I was going to be an epidemiologist. That was my main focus. You know, that was something that I really cared about in terms of dealing with disparities, especially amongst communities of color, especially particularly Black people. And man, I did an internship for New York State the summer before my final year at Xavier. And I ended up working on a lot of like health policy and doing a lot of like just reading on policy and law. And I was like, I kind of like this. So that kind of piqued my interest in regards to law school. So literally that summer, I made a decision. Okay, let me see how do I get into law school. Oh, I got to take an LSAT. All right, so I signed up for the LSAT in the fall. I remember I purchased a course to prep for it, and it kind of just went from there. I mean, I got a score and I got into a couple of different law schools and ended up deciding on Thurgood Marshall School of Law. But
what made that's that really how my... Let me ask you that. What made that the school for you?
Oh, man. So that's actually a great story. So, you know, I got into a variety of law schools, PWIs and HBCUs. As we all know, I went to Xavier University of Louisiana.
Absolutely.
And another great HBCU, correct? So I remember when I went on my school visits for basketball in high school, when I stepped on Xavier's campus, there was a feeling internally that I had that I felt that no other school was able to replicate. So I'm somebody that often goes off of those emotions, like that feeling or feeling that's telling me this is where you need to be. So that same feeling was replicated when I stepped on Thurgood Marshall's School of Law's campus. And that told me everything I needed to know, essentially. And that's why I ended up picking that school. So.
Okay. Yeah. Keep going with the story. I just wanted to know the Thurgood Marshall piece.
Oh, man. So it was really interesting. I remember, first of all, taking the LSAT was a story. And when I tell you, I don't know if folks remember, but I actually broke my foot my senior year playing basketball. And I remember I had to get surgery and I was in the boot. I couldn't walk for a while. Like, throughout that whole time, I was studying for the LSAT somehow, some way. And I remember I went into the LSAT saying, you know what? You got me. And you got me. And I did well. And, you know, once I got into multiple law schools, I remember when I received my LSAT score, that's when it hit me. I was sitting in the car with my trainer at Xavier, and we just came back from like a pool workout because I was in rehab. And I was like, this is my score. He was like, what does that mean? I said, I'm going to law school. That's what that means. Like, I'm going to law school. Like, it was that moment of bliss, man. I tell you, man, I was sitting in the car in front of the convocation center, like, I'm going to law school. I remember walking into the practice with hobbling. And just sitting there like, I'm going to law school. Like, I'm going to get into law schools. And it was the most amazing feeling. And from there, attended Thurgood Marshall School of Law. I met some amazing people there. You know, one thing that I appreciated about Xavier is I left with a brother with multiple brothers and sisters, a brother and sister, but with multiple brothers and sisters out of Xavier. And I have lifelong relationships. Like, you know, you can call me at any point. If I don't pick up, I'm calling you back. And I built relationships like that at Thurgood as well, which was amazing because, you know, I was able to find a good group of guys and girls as well and ladies as well that we all were just focused. We're all grinding. We're all trying to get it. And, you know, we went through it. We went through the ups and downs of law school. It was law school stressful. I will never forget it. I remember for the whole first year, most people didn't even know I went to law school until like my second year. It was because I was gone. I was just in a hole most of the time. But man, going through that process, learning how, you know, it was amazing because there's so much to it. You know, learning how to legally write, legal research. You know, it was like a whole new language you have to learn. And even learning how to just move amongst folks within the profession. Because, you know, there's a slight level of pretentiousness within my profession. I will be quite frank. I'm not even going to sit here and sugarcoat it. But just learning how to move amongst those circles, you know. For the first time, I remember the first time I was introduced to a judge. And, you know, I love networking. That's my thing. You know, I love, if you call me and say, hey, I need this. I'm like, okay, let me see who I know who can do this and do that. And let me see if I can connect you. That's my thing. That's my niche. And I remember as a 1L, I had a great professor, Professor Bennett. She was our legal writing professor. And she was amazing. And she really poured into me. And I thank her to this day because I wouldn't be where I am without her. But she brought in a state judge. And I remember standing there and just looking at it. And it was so funny because I didn't know what to say. She walked over to me, my friend and I, and said, "Go, go talk to him. Go, you guys. I need you. You two particularly. I need you. I want you guys to do this." And I remember from that day on, that's kind of how I learned how to, okay, be in the rooms with judges, how to speak with judges, how to just deal with people in different levels of the profession. Sometimes I remember, like the other day, I was able on the phone with. It's so funny. I was on the phone with a general counsel. Now, general counsel is the head of a corporation. Like, he's their legal head of the corporation. And I called him, just was talking to him, told him, "Hey, probably going to be in your city next week. I would love to meet with you. Let's grab a drink. Let's grab some lunch. Let's do something." And, you know, I got off the phone. And the funniest thing to me was I had a moment of reflection where I said, well, you know, a couple of years ago, I would have never imagined being able to have conversations with people like this, or to be able to just say, "Hey, can I give you a call? Let's have a quick convo because I have to run something by you." And I think that's the beauty of what Thurgood Marshall helped me learn in terms of just how to network and really, you know, network vertically, but also horizontally, which is mm-hmm. important. Because a lot of people omit the fact, a lot of people like to network up, but you have to network with your people around you as well. Because the people around you are going to grow as you grow. As I grow, my best friends in my circle, they're going to grow. As I grow, all the folks from my law school that we all are literally locked in together, they're going to grow in their profession as well. I mean, in 5 years from now, I can't imagine where we're going to be. And, you know, the sky's the limit in my eyes. But, you know, I think it's important that people know that you have to network horizontally and vertically. And sometimes folks forget that because they just like to network up, but then, you know, look around and they don't know anyone that they're, none of their age mates for to say or anything like that. So right. But that was my process. I think Thurgood, after my 1L year, I was at a PI firm, Domingo Garcia Port PC. It was an amazing firm. I actually met my mentor there, who was one of the greatest trial attorneys in the nation. I know that for a fact. He has like 850 jury trials under his belt. So he's top notch guy. And, you know, I actually worked with him on that first, I remember we got $1 million judgment and on a case I worked on with him. And man, I was like, this is crazy. It was so much fun. And I remember after that, my 2L year, everyone was saying like, oh, like, you know, oh, and I also worked for two judges in Dallas, Texas as well, prior to my time at Domingo. And I remember after that, I went back 2L year and everyone was like, oh, you're going to do PI. Like, of course you're going to go into personal injury. And I decided not to. And the reason being was that I always wanted to go into corporate law. And a lot of folks were like, why corporate law? You know, it's not many of us in corporate law. It's not many of us in the profession. I think we make up 3% of the whole profession, if that. And folks were like, why corporate law? And I said, we're not there. Like, there's not many of us there. It's harder for us and all these things. And I looked at them and said, every reason you just said is exactly why I need to be there. Because if I don't go in there, get to the point where I can open doors for us, who does? Who does that for us? You know, I've watched so many of my other classmates and students just always go into law school saying, I want to do corporate law, but feeling like they don't have access to it, you know, versus some of our white counterparts. They're just like, oh, I'll make a phone call, I'm in, you know, I'm not worried. I want to change that. I want to try to help open more doors for us within the realm of corporate law. And, you know, it's been really good to me. So that 2L year, I went to a bunch of different, what they're called, job fairs throughout the U.S. And I always tell folks, I'm like, spend the money on yourself. A lot of folks are like, that's expensive. I'm like, catching flights, staying at a hotel, you know, attending all these job fairs. But I looked at it as an investment in myself, because one thing I wanted to do was have options throughout the U.S. in regards to, or at least get myself out there so folks can make a decision as to, do we want this guy? So I remember I went to Atlanta, a SemJeff up there. I went to Sunbelt in Dallas. I went to a Boston one in DC. I went to another Boston one, I believe, in Kansas City. I believe the four of those. And, you know, from there, I interviewed. And one thing, I'll touch on interviewing a little bit. For me, when I went into interviews, the goal was to not talk about school or work.
Okay.
And a lot of people were like, why? And I'm like, because if I'm sitting in front of you right now, mm-hmm. that means you looked at my resume. You already know I can do it.
Right.
You know I'm smart. Mm-hmm. You already know I'm a smart guy. You think I'm a smart guy. I think I am as well. But, you know, that's a mm-hmm. subjective thing. But, you know, I'm a smart guy at that point. You believe I can do the work. Otherwise, you wouldn't have even allowed me to be for you. At this point, you just want to know if I could be in your office and you can have a conversation with me. Mm-hmm. And I think I some folks miss that point. I think that's one of the most important parts of interviewing. So my goal was, by the time the interview time was closing, we were looking like, we gotta wrap this up. I'm so sorry, but great talking to you, you know? We're not dragging to the finish line. We're talking through, we're blowing through that, you know? And oftentimes the way I used to do that was with my, there's a section called skills and interests at the bottom of your resume. What's something interesting? A lot of folks are like, I'm not interesting. You'd be surprised. The most random thing you like to do, most people may not be into it. For me, like, I'm a car, I call it a car connoisseur. Anyone that knows me knows I love cars. Like, I love cars. Like, and you tell me what kind of car you have, I can tell you all about the stats, all about anything about it. It's one of those things that since I was a little kid, it was just a passion of mine. And it will be for the rest of my life. I put that, and it's funny because I purposely put antique car connoisseur. And then I put cooking, because I like to cook, you know, some Haitian dishes and things like that. So, you know, oftentimes I'm sitting with older guys, particularly older white men. So they're like, antique car connoisseur, what's your car? So I would tell them, I like the 99 to like 2001, the 7 Series, the big body, long style LI edition. I buy the 760 if I can get the V12 engine. And they sit there and they say, 99, that's not antique. That's not an antique. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm 23, 24, I'm 25. I'm like, that's an antique to me.
Right.
Because when I was a kid, I used to, my uncle had one of those in New York City. And I remember driving through Yonkers and saying, damn, that's a good looking car. Ever since then, I said, I'm going to get one of those. I'm going to refurbish it. I'm going to have it looking brand new. Yada, yada. And then they say, ah, man, I like the 69 Corvette or something. You know, they start talking about their cars, right? And then I'll bring up the fact that, like, you know, I do like the Plymouth or, you know, so one of the 1970s like Chargers or something. I am into those too. Get one of those, you know, a little Fast and Furious type thing. And, you know, and it was always a conversation starter. But it's so funny because it always went that way. And I knew it would because obviously there's an age gap, age difference. But we have one commonality. We love cars. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about it. You know, so we'll talk about cars. And they'll say, cooking. Like, what do you cook, man? And I'll bring up something that I know they know nothing about. I'll bring up griot, which is like a traditional pork dish that we cook. That's in Haiti. That's from Haiti. And they'll be like, what is that? I'll break it down to them. Tell them how we do it. Tell them, you know, conversation starters. You have to always have that. And nothing that has to do with school. Nothing that has to do with work. But see, this is how it would always go for me. We would have our talk. Sometimes we'd bring up some sports. And then at the end of the call, at the end of the interview, this is pre-COVID time, so we were face-to-face. They would say, oh, crap, let me ask you something about what's your favorite class in law school? And then I'll say Torts. And they'll say, okay, great. Listen, great talking to you. You know, they're just checking the box so just to say they asked that. But at the end of the day, no. They want to just know if they can have you in their office. So coming out of all those coming out of all those interviews, I ended up getting offers to like 3 or 4 different firms for that summer for my second year summer. And the way it works is actually not offers, but they have callbacks where they call you and fly you out to their city, to their office, put you in a hotel, and then you interview, like you do a day or two of interviewing throughout their offices. And and Wine and Dine You, all the good stuff. It's nice. I won't lie. It's nice. And I remember, but with being with the firm that I'm currently with, they just treated me so well. I mean, I feel like they really rolled out the red carpet. And most importantly, it seemed like a firm that was invested in my growth as an attorney. And that was important to me. Not to say the other firms weren't, but they just seemed like they were the most invested in that. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'm trying New City, Kansas City. I'll go out there, head out there for a summer, see what it's like. And I went out there and had a great time. Had a great time as a summer associate and ended up getting a full-time offer, which was amazing. But while in Kansas City, I knew we had a federal judge who was an alum from Thurgood, alum of 94. So during my time there, I actually sent them a cold email and just said, hey, you know, there's a couple of us Thurgood students in town. We're working at various firms and corporations. We would love to meet with you if possible. And he reached back out, said, I would love to, took us all out to dinner with his family. And I remember I really reached out to him because I sought mentorship. I really sought mentorship. And, you know, eventually I was also aware that he was going through the process of accepting applications for clerking. And I decided to submit mine. And we went through the formal process of interviewing me, and I was selected. So that was amazing because being a federal clerk is a big deal in my profession. It's a highly sought after position because there's a limited amount of federal judges throughout the nation. And, you know, and then also being a Black federal law clerk is very important because there aren't many of us, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge, huge position for me to get offered. And I ended up getting an offer also to work at my current firm, and I ended up asking them to defer. They deferred me for a year and supported me to go clerk. And I actually came in as a second year with the firm I'm with now, and because they give me credit for the clerkship experience. But while I was clerking, I mean, working for the courts was such a great experience because I gained a wealth of knowledge of just how the litigation practice works. From the court's perspective. And I also gained knowledge in regards to how certain judges think, how my judge, you know, his philosophy towards the law and how he approaches issues. And it just gave me some, and also it worked on my legal. I mean, at the end of the day, legal writing is everything. And that was very, very important for my growth. So, you know, I'm kind of skipping around here, but of course, before I was working for my judge, I graduated from school. But I often skip that part of the story because I'm a part of the COVID class. So it wasn't a graduation. You know, we didn't really get that last hurrah as a class, which is unfortunate. And you know, it was tough because we actually went straight into bar study. Like we went straight into it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that whole area is like a gray area for a lot of us. But I remember studying for the bar was tough because, you know, there was a lot of social issues going on that summer. I remember I got off of social media, and I hate that it's slipping my mind as to what exactly was happening, but I remember I randomly, in the middle of bar study, said, let me check and see what's going on Twitter. I downloaded Twitter, and I was like, the world's on fire. What is going on? And that's when I like found out about like the riots and all, like, I literally found out about all that stuff probably about 2 to 3 weeks late. So, which is, I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but that's how closed off.
That's a good thing, though.
It was a good thing.
To focus.
yeah, because I really was closed off. But but also internally, I just felt like, you know, I should be out there.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? So it was like that internal struggle where it's like, as a Black man, I was like, man, this is a cause that I should be out there standing up. But also, I was like, I have an exam I need to pass. I need to become an attorney. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was like weighing those things. And I ended up picking the bar and continuing to focus on what I had to, because I know the impact I can have being an attorney down the line. And that's my one of my goals. I know my vision. I know what my goal is. I know what my basically my fire is. And but I remember going to bar prep and logging in and just saying, Jesus, the world is on fire. What is going on here? And saying, well, I got to lock back in. I locked back in, took the bar. Man, taking the bar, I took it in person. So this is in the height of COVID. Mm-hmm. My state, Missouri, decided to still have their in-person bar. She's thankful for that. But I remember being in the bar, man, like you are a whole different person. It's like, after I took it, I remember I called one of my boys, and he said, he was looking at me on FaceTime. And I was just like, yeah, man, you know, it's done. He was like, good, man, I'm happy for you, but are you okay? I was like, yeah, I'm just here. Just here. I don't know what to do, but I'm just here. He said, bro, your eyes look glassy, like you've been hazed or something. I was like, mm-hmm. Probably have.
Pretty much. Won't lie to you. Pretty much. Yeah.
That sounds about right. Now I gotta reactivate myself with society and life.
Yeah.
It was a great process. I passed the bar, which was an amazing moment
for
myself, but also my family.
So can you tell me a little bit about how vertical and horizontal networking works?
Yeah, of course, man. So vertical networking is essentially you are networking. So what that looks like specifically is that you're a law student, mm-hmm. and you're networking with attorneys. You're networking up because you guys are at different levels, even though you're in the same profession. And the beauty of vertically networking is it doesn't only apply to your profession. It also applies to, as a law student, you're networking with a doctor, or you're networking with doctors, or you're networking with pharmacists, or you're meeting engineers, or business owners, or you're networking with folks that are ahead of you or where you would be if you were in that profession at that same stage. So, but horizontally, which is someone who's an equivalent of your position in that career. So that's like you're a law student, you're networking with other law students throughout the US, or you're networking with PhD students throughout the US, or you're networking with other engineering student, you know, that's networking horizontally. Now, the same applies in the profession. So at whatever level you are in that profession, you network with folks at that level as well. That's horizontal networking. When you network with people that are ahead of you, that's vertical. So the importance of that, why I like to always point that out is a lot of folks like to network vertically. They always think that I got to get to people that are up ahead, which in essence, it's good to do. It is. But what they forget is as they progress, who else is progressing with them? Those are folks that are at the same level as you. So when you become that big doctor, or when I become a partner or a general counsel of a law firm, a lot of folks that are in my horizontal network are also going to be at my level as well. You know, so those are the people that I'm likely going to want to have to talk to and contact and be connected with, because we're at the same level, you know, and I'm sure we can help each other in one way or the one instance or the other. Like I said, though, it is important to also network vertically, but I think oftentimes people overlook the horizontal networking aspect of just networking. And I always want to point that out to folks, because I think sometimes we lose sight of what we have around us. I mean, essentially, you know, coming out of Xavier, you all are my network there. You get what I'm saying? Like, we all were at Xavier together. We all were at similar levels. Now, you're talking to me, you're a PhD. You have a PhD. You know, I have a JD, I'm an attorney. I mean.
Oh no, we're... I don't have a PhD. Oh. No, I got an MS, I'm working on an MD.
Oh, MS, working on MD. I apologize for that.
No, you good.
That, screwing up that distinction, my bad. But point still there is that, I mean, look how many years from Xavier, look at where we're at, look at what we're doing. you're a part of my horizontal network, just as well as many of the other brothers and sisters from Xavier. Mm-hmm. And that's important to me, you know, making sure that I keep up with folks that are around the same level as I am. And you don't have to be in my profession to be a part of my network. And at the end of the day, networking isn't always a, oh, what do you do? I do this and you do this. Okay, let's just be cool. No, you have to genuinely just be a good person. So for me, networking isn't hard because I just enjoy people. I enjoy talking. I enjoy catching up. You know, it's important. I enjoy supporting folks and what they're doing because that's just innately who I am. You know, so it's easy for me to just be that person. You get what I'm saying? Just like you said, when your podcast first dropped, I hit you immediately and said, I love this. Like, this is amazing. Right. I don't know if I can do it right now, but when the time is right, call me because I'm ready. Yeah, you know, and I meant that. I meant that. It's important. And, you know, I just think folks have to be cognizant.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that because it's so much. Your community is in the horizontal networking. And a lot of times people only view things as a value exchange, you know, and I don't think that that's the perfect way or the right way to view networking because, you know, I might do something for you and never need anything from you. Anything you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right. And I think building up that kind of reputation for helping people, regardless of, you know, if they're doing something for me or not, you know, I think is an important thing to always keep in mind with networking. And having a network is extremely important because it allows you to facilitate and get things done in an easier manner. You know, a lot of times people neglect networking and they have to keep reinventing the wheel every time they need something. They got to go find out how to do it themselves and all of this, when you could just tap into your network and be like, okay, well, I know that they do this or they do this. And another thing I wanted to ask you, do you feel like being a great networker, having a personality to be able to network, you know, because certain things factor into that, trustworthiness, charisma. Yeah. Is that something that is innate or is that something that you were kind of like raised in as a part of your culture? Like, is your dad like that? Is your mom like that? Brothers and sisters?
So funny thing is both of my parents are like that.
Okay.
They definitely, my mom, she's one of the most giving people in this world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I say to a fault.
right.
You know, but, see, and I think because of that, I also have that same giving spirit. Mm-hmm. And my mom's also great with people, always, you know, great at relationship building. You know, I have so many aunties, like, you know, throughout my life. And my dad is also like that as well. Mm-hmm. So my father would go on a plane. And by the end of that plane ride, he's like best friends with the guy he's sitting next to.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I have, it's funny, I have the same, I do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met some like amazing folks on plane rides. I met, you know, I'll go and even something as simple as your Uber driver. And then most folks don't talk to their Uber driver. But sometimes I'll say, hey, how you doing today? Oh, cool. Next thing you know, he's talking to me about his country, the issues they got going on. How like the impact, you know, but like he's gonna be his whole life story. And I, you know, and I'm genuinely like, okay, like I love to hear about that because I love to hear different perspectives on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny, you just never know who's next to you or who's around. And sometimes just a simple, hey, how are you doing today? It goes such a long way for folks. And you know, I don't do it to make people feel good. I do it because I genuinely want to know, how are you doing today? Mm-hmm. Are you, and you know, so I do think it came from my parents for sure. My dad is, I remember my little sisters used to get so annoyed, but they'd be like, Dad, we can't go anywhere with you. You're over here, best friends with the damn guy that we did.
Right.
Work in the elevator or something, you know, but, you know, you got to just be good to people. And then, mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. You just have to be good to people.
You know? Yeah. And I think too, you know, my dad's like that. I find it to be a little bit more difficult for me just because I find it hard to like build a relationship with somebody that I don't really know yet or don't trust. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes we're raised in certain environments where it's like, if somebody is nice to you, you want to know why. You know,
yeah.
Why are they doing that? Yeah. You know, why, you know, what they want, you know, and I think a lot of times that's been a fault of mine because I can cut off relationships that way. Somebody that could have been beneficial, you know, I'm mistrusting them like they about to do something to me and they could be in the mindset to really help me, you know, and I think that My dad is he's very intentional about building relationships regardless of who the person is. You know, he's like, you have to have the same level of respect for the janitor that you have for the CEO because the janitor got
that's
the key.
That's very true.
You know what I mean?
And that's me. That's me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you run across certain people that just have this welcoming personality, you know what I mean? Like, you have it, Mikey got it, you get what I'm saying? DJ got it. Like, y'all just have this, like, you could not have met you before, but you feel like you know him. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that is innate. You know, I don't think that that's something that you could really be taught. I think that's just who you are.
That's very true. And I can't disagree with you. I can't. I mean, that lends to my networking ability for sure. Like 100%. And it does come natural to me, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that it doesn't come like that for everyone. Right. So, you know, I tell folks, you know, because here's the thing. One thing law school teaches is how to try to be objectivity versus subjectivity. And you really need to push to be as objective as you can when it comes to a lot of issues and things going on. And, you know, not everyone's like me. My way of doing that, my way of networking is not the way to go about it. I'm never going to tell someone that. I'm going to tell you what I experience and what it does for me. And I'm not going to tell you that's what you have to do because at the end of the day, you're different than I am. Mm-hmm. So for you, networking might be, it might not be saying randomly hi to some random stranger you don't know. But eventually, whatever your niche is and however you find that to work for you, live out and within that. And you know, like, I'm not the kind of person to ever sit there and say, no, you have to do it. No, there's no one way to do anything. Trust me.
But it's working for you.
it works for me. Now, that's what I will tell you. I'm going to tell you what works for me. And I'm going to tell you, hey, man, you know, I do recommend that, you know, you do that. But I'm not going to sit there and say whatever you're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I think essentially I'm one of those people that there's no one way to get something done. You know, now, are there tried and true ways where it's like consistent? There's like a precedent, like, nah, I mean, this is what's worked for all these years. But also, I don't like getting caught up in this is the whole way of doing it. So we got to stick to it, you know, that mentality. Mm-hmm. you know, I do want to be, you know, point out that, you know, there's no one way to do it. But I'll tell you what works for me. And like, you know, like you said, it's natural for me. So I you know, my mom's always said it. She said, since you were a baby, like you, people were just always drawn to you. Even as a child growing up, you were always bringing people towards you. And I see it in your adulthood as well. And, you know, it's an innate thing, I believe. But I enjoy networking because I genuinely want to know, keep up with people, know how you're doing, see your progress, see what's going on, talk to you about what's the issues you're dealing with, you know, and, you know, I mean, one thing I do say is I probably don't do that enough for my own myself, but I'm always willing to keep up with folks and make sure, you know, be as supportive and be as supportive as I can. Because at the end of the day, we have to support each other in what we're doing.
Ever draining?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's times where I realize, like, I pour so much into everyone else. I'm not pouring enough into myself.
Mm-hmm.
That happens for sure. And I think that's a part of just adulthood, man, growing up and realizing, like, I gotta refocus and really put some time in with me and for me, you know, and that's something I've been learning over time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What impact has culture, nationality, as a Haitian and Dominican American had on your drive to excel in your professional career? We were talking a little bit about this beforehand. And I was just saying, you know, sometimes you see different cultures the dad, he's a doctor. His grandfather was a doctor. And, you know, they passed down that legacy of excelling in career, excelling in academics, whatever that is. What impact has that had on you?
Man, it had a big one. What I'll tell you is, according to my grandmother, back in Haiti, my great grandfather was a mayor of one of the cities there. And we actually did not live in poverty in Haiti, according to grandma. It's when she immigrated to America is when she kind of started from the bottom and was in New York. And she became a nurse. I worked at the nursing home, Isabella. She worked there for 40 years, I believe. Or 30 to 40 years, somewhere in that range. And I remember as a child, I used to ride my scooter at night. It's 11 blocks from our apartment building. I used to ride my scooter down there, pick her up, and walk back with her every night. And my mom, my grandmother had two children, my mother, my auntie was the oldest, and my mother. And my auntie ended up becoming an attorney. And she works in DC actually. And my mom became a physician. And my mom had me while she was in medical school. So I was living in like the same apartment. My grandma was raising me for the first couple of years of my life. I lived in the same exact apartment building that apartment that my mom and my auntie grew up in. And I just remember seeing the difference in regards to once, like, my mom graduated from medical school, how, like, my sister, we moved up to Albany, you know, just seeing the life that she was able to help provide for us. And I just knew, I was like, man, I always put the pressure on myself. I said, well, this is where we're at right now, and I know I can't go down. Right. I can't, as I progress, I can't go down. And I put that own pressure on myself. Now, my mom always expected excellence in terms of academics from us. She was very hard on us when it came to academics, especially me. It was so funny because I remember one time she wanted to kick me off. First of all, I'm an athlete, mm-hmm. but I'm one of the highest GPAs on every team I've been on, right? I got a B in some course in high school, and she wanted to pull me off the basketball team. And my coaches had to go to her and say, they said, you know, like, Miss Pluvios, your son's being recruited by colleges to play for free. Pulling him off the basketball team over this grade is not what, like, you're not going to have to pay for your son's college because of his basketball skills, mm-hmm. skill set. And so she still let me play. But I remember having to go through that. And it was the most embarrassing thing because, like, a lot of folks would be happy with their B. Like, they would be like, man, I wish I got a B. Mm-hmm. And for me, my mom was ready to pull me off the whole team, man. And but she was tough. But I think she grew up in that. You know, she grew up where grandma was very staunch when it came to academics as well. And I think I was raised in that same with that same mentality. And that carried for me because I remember I went to Xavier, man. And my first semester, man, I hit campus. I was 17. We went out every weekend. I'm on the ball team, so we're getting into everything for free. Like, you know, I'm just moving around every weekend I was going. I remember at the end of the semester, I looked at my GPA and I said, this isn't even a representation of me. Mm-hmm. You know, I really had to have like a come to God, Jesus moment and say, like, this is unacceptable. Like, this isn't me. I can't sit here and look at this and say, this represents me. And from that moment on, that's when that's when I got my act together academically. I had to remember who I was and where I came from because, you know, those things that my mother instilled in me and carry to this day. Now, that comes from Haitian culture for sure. and even Dominican culture with my dad too, because we're just expected to give it your all. Like, and I think there's a certain pressure that's put on you to be like, you know, doctor, lawyer, engineer, and all that stuff. And it's something that is often talked about within our cultures.
Not how do they get that across? That's my question. How does that come across? Right. Like, is it more like language, what they say? Is it more beacon? Well, is I it think, more like
yeah, no, is? I got you. Let's talk about it. So it's interesting because my grandmother is more so that old school culture where she's like, you gotta do your lawyer, doctor, that and that, right? Now I had some amazing parents. My mother was amazing because she never pushed that on us. Now, she pushed excellence in regards to the academia and all those things, but she never, ever said the words, you got to be this, this, or that to be successful in this household. Now, a lot of my friends or other, you know, peers, Asian peers and West Indian peers, their parents were saying that for sure. And I remember in like, I am like just immediately just put that in my head that I had to do that or I wouldn't be successful. Like I put that own pressure on myself. My mom never did, which was the funniest thing. And I didn't even realize it until my junior year when I decided to change majors. Because I remember I called my mom and I was like, it's not going to go well.
Right.
Oh, man. I was like, you know, mom, I'll be honest. I don't think I want to be a physician or I wanted to be an OBGYN. I don't think I want to pursue this anymore. Mm-hmm. She was like, okay. Said, what? And she said, no, I just want you to find whatever makes you happy. And I was like, really? like literally, that's what it hit me. Like, wow, my mom. This whole time, I put that on pressure on myself. But that's only in my household. Now, I know in other households, I would tell you otherwise, for sure. And, you know, my father was the same way. Like, my dad's an engineer, but he's a business owner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was raised in a single family home. Like my parents separated when I was young. But, you know, he's the same way where with his kids, he's not pushing a profession on you or any of those things. He just wants you to be great within whatever makes you great. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you, I lucked up with those parents because I know there's a lot more. Now, albeit, I ended up becoming an attorney anyways. I was like, look at that. It worked out for you, mom. Look at you. Right. You know? And I know my grandmother just loves that. You know, like I know for sure because my grandma's still from kind of like that older mentality of thinking, which is fine. I mean, that's what they grew up with and that's fine. But, you know, I mean, I still ended up doing that. I know my sister, she's looking at either from an MD or like doula stuff and things like that. And she's, mm-hmm. You know, and I have a little brother who's 11, Jonathan. He's the one that my mom's like, all right, now listen, you seem to be a little different than your siblings. So let me tell you something. You see what they're doing? You need to figure out what you're going to be doing. Because my brother, he's one of those people, as a kid, he's like, I can stay home forever. And my little sister and I never spoke like that. So my mom's like, I got to talk different to this one. Yeah. I can't really do that. But no, I think, you know, just for my household, it was looking around. And seeing and knowing what we had, you know, and knowing that I was like, man, I can't go below this. Because if I went below this, I would feel like I was a failure. Because, you know, I watched all the work my mom put in, you know, to get to her level. Mm-hmm. I watched how hard she, you know, grinded through school, how she had me in school. She still did her thing, residency. I watched her go through all those things. So, seeing that and knowing all that she did, which essentially was for her kids, mm-hmm. I knew I couldn't, I had to do something with my life. Now, I didn't know what the heck that was, though, essentially, mm-hmm. but I just knew I had to make something happen. Otherwise, I would have been disappointed in myself.
Right.
You know. So.
I think it's like, for me, I had a totally different experience because it is no replica. You get what I mean? Yeah. Like for what I'm doing, you know, really nothing that I'm doing has a replica that I saw growing up.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't see it till I got to Xavier, really. You know, seeing Black doctors, Black authors, Black, you know what I mean? I didn't see that until I got to Xavier, but my parents did push a level of excellence. It didn't matter what you did, really. Now, I'll say with my mom, it didn't matter. You know what I mean? She wasn't like that, but my dad was, he's like, yeah, you're going to be a neurosurgeon. I'm like, how you going to tell me?
What if I just want to be a pilot or something, man?
Right. He's very forceful when it comes to like that type of, he was very disciplined. It lucked up for him because I wanted to be a doctor anyway. You know what I mean? But and sometimes too, like I had these periods in my life where I started questioning, like, did I want to be a doctor or was I conditioned to be one?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? It's like when I hear like an athlete say, oh yeah, like I wanted to be a hooper all my life, but who was the first person to put a basketball in your hand? You get what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if your dad or your mom put a basketball in your hand when you was three,
you picked
it. That's more, right. Yeah. You think you picked it, but they condition you. I think too, like having an older brother really helped me because he was successful at whatever he did. So I'm like, I'm not about to be the black sheep. You know what I mean? Like,
man, you know, I'm with you there. See, I'm the oldest of mine.
Oh yeah. See, the oldest is worse for the oldest. A lot of people don't understand that, but it really is. You know, you get all of the lessons, all of the training, and the rubric is on you. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we learn what not to do from what y'all do. You know, I'd be like, nah. That'll get you in trouble. You know what I mean? So I think that y'all do have a role. And also typically what I find in families, what the oldest does, the younger ones follow suit. So, you know, if the oldest is rebellious, disrespectful, you know, that type of thing, it gives the younger ones a rubric to do that. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so in my family, because that wasn't tolerated with my brother, I already knew, like, there's no chance I'm getting away with it. You know what
I'm
I mean?
Go so, that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate it being a younger sibling because I learned so much from my older brother. And also just, I understood that whatever I had to do, I had to finish it. You know what I mean? It's not, that was my dad's biggest thing. He was like, now, be sure you want to start this because we are not going to let you off of it. You know, so that was like in sports or anything, you know, we might not like practice one day or something like that. And be like, man, I don't want to do this no more. He's like, no, you're going to finish. You might not have to do it the next year, but you're going to finish this year, you know, because you started
Listen, when I think my mom was tough, I'll never forget, I think it was like sixth grade. Like the fifth grade or something, I think she came to a game. My mom used to always go to my games, and I think my mom finally told me. She said, "You know," she said, "they call me Joshua on the Haitian side." She said, "Josh, there's no point in me coming to the games if you're not doing anything." I was like, "Dang!" I remember that, but I tell you, my mom was tough, bro.
She's like, hey, come out here to watch you run suicides.
So, like, literally, I remember telling myself, man, I really got to take this seriously and get better and actually start scoring. And, you know, and I remember that was young, I had that. So, I'll never forget that because, you know, and I know my mom would probably be like, I didn't say that now. Like, you know, she got amnesia now. But no, she definitely did. And I remember that vividly. I remember this conversation.
But it helped.
And, listen, it helped, man.
It's too many participation trophies these days.
Yeah, man.
It's a lot of that.
I got my act together, man.
Yeah. Okay. So I see that you majored in public health with a minor in biology and math, which isn't typical for an attorney at all. And I want to know what, I understand that you changed, but what inspired that change specifically? Like, what let you know, okay, this is law is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
I mean, again, I mean, that was that internship mm-hmm. in New York, working for New York State. It was a public health internship, and mm-hmm. I worked for a good brother named Dapo Kinley, who works for New York State. He's actually only, he's a frat brother of yours. And
okay, shout out A5.
Yeah, I'll let you get it back. So he, hey, I'll let you know. But no, he was very impactful for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's a public health professional. But the work I was doing for him had to do with just a lot of law. And I remember sitting in the library, the New York State Library, and just reading. And I don't even like reading, be honest with you, I don't like reading. But I do, and like, so it's really funny to me that I ended up in a profession where what I do is research, read, and write. So those are things that I was not into growing up, but I actually, like, I don't know, I just enjoyed what I do. And I think I realized that it's like, it's not that I don't enjoy reading or I don't enjoy writing. I just didn't enjoy what I was doing at the time for it. And I think I found what my niche is now. And I'm one of those kind of people where if I'm not good at something, I'm gonna keep pounding until I get it down. And, you know, that really sparked my interest for law. I think once I was in law school, some of the successes I had, like I said, with that case after my 1L summer, then being a summer associate, then ending up being a federal law clerk. I mean, working with a federal judge, I mean, it was just like, well, even if I don't think this is for me, like I am literally experiencing some of the best experiences you can have at this stage of your career. And, you know, it just clicked for me, man. Like it was so, it's really funny because growing up, I would have never told you I wanted to be an attorney. You didn't hear it at Xavier. I wasn't telling you guys that at Xavier, but it's just funny to see how quick things can just change for you when you can you realize like, oh, I think this is my calling. And, you know, so right now I think I'm at the stage where I'm like figuring out what's my niche within this field. That's really my true calling and where am I best suited and what's, you know, to make an impact. And because at the end of the day, I just want to be impactful.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel a need to give back to your home country?
Yeah, I think, especially Haiti, man. I mean, you know, Haiti recently has gone through so much turmoil.
A lot.
And it's, you know, it's been disheartening to watch. I think, you know, I do want to do things for my country.
Mm-hmm.
And Dominica. I mean, I go to Dominica probably once every 2 years or something. And actually, you know, I'm still very, my dad's often out there. Still very much kind of like, I just had like this pendant was made down there and sent to me. That's like the shape of Dominica itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's imperative that you give back because, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm really in tune with my roots. Like, I really am. Like, you know, you come in my car, you only hear Caribbean, Afrobeat. Like, that's just me. That's just been me. It's been me. I've been known for that since college, just undergrad, actually. And, you know, I think it's very important to still be connected with your country if you can be. And I think it's important that you go back and help in whatever way you can. I mean, these third world countries, they need us to come back and you know, help out, do what we can. I mean, so, if, you know, hopefully one day I'm at a place where I can do things such as build schools and, you know, build healthcare centers and, you know, be able to donate and have supplies being sent consistently, you know. I mean, honestly, those philanthropic goals, that's something that's very important to me as well. Another reason why I'm like, I gotta figure this career stuff out because I need to get it so I can, yeah. You know, because I gotta be able to, you know, you gotta be able to have West folk. And you know, I'm one of those people that's not aloof to my privilege that I've had. You know, I think we're college graduates, we're seeking higher education. Like, there's a certain privilege we all have right now that
absolutely
others aren't afforded. And that's just at the end of the day, I don't, you know, no matter, notwithstanding where you came from, you know, where you're, you know, what your background is. We have a privilege at this point in our lives. And we have to be objective about that and understand that there's other folks that we can be helping and that seek and need our help. And even if that means you just being visible, some folks don't realize just being visible is enough. Because I always tell people, growing up, like you mentioned, you said something very interesting, and I know you're the interviewer, you know, I'm not going, but you said something very interesting to me that stuck out because I felt the same way. You said Xavier was the first time you looked around and saw like other brothers and said, well, brothers are doctors or going to be pharmacists. And man, I felt the same way. I'll never forget the day when I got there and Dean Burr was sitting there yelling, you a Xavier. You're going to be a Xavier, right? You're going to make it. He said, you're going to make it. You're going to be something one day. Oh, I will never forget that feeling. I'm looking around, looking at all these black and brown people and saying, wow, we're all going to be something.
Yeah,
that stuck with me to this day. I still have a relationship with Dean. That stuck with me till this day. Mm-hmm. And it's true. I mean, I never felt that before. I didn't feel that anywhere else. And, you know,
to me,
forward a couple of years,
other black men serious about academics too.
Yeah.
You know, you talking about what you doing today? Man, I'm going to the library, bro. How about you?
Yeah. You know, and we were like, nah, go to the library, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you walking around and you like,
you start feeling out of place. Like, what are you doing?
Let me take a pass to the library too, man, I'm not about to be out here getting lagged behind.
Right.
Listen, I kid you not, but like I was taking this math class and I could not figure out this math for the life of me. And I remember sitting there being like, man, the question is this long, but the answer is 3 pages long. Mm-hmm. I was like, what kind of math is this? But then I remember I used to go to my classmates. I used to tell them, I said, listen, I really could use your help. I will, on your time, like, let me know if you ever have time to just talk with me through it, I'll meet you where you want to go. Like, cause I was like, man, I gotta make it out this damn path. You know, I gotta figure it out. And you know, I just being around other brothers and sisters that really felt that way and really moved that way. They moved by what they said. Like a lot of people talk, but a lot of us backed our stuff up.
Right.
At the end of the day. Like, you know, and that's what I respected about Xavier. Like the library was just as popping as any other spots.
Club in the Xavier, city, right?
You know, back. It was Club. That was Club Xavier back in the day. Club Xavier. And you know, but we all know it was Club Xavier. I remember, you know, we'd be up in there, man, until late nights. I remember, you know, during finals when they had like the 24-hour stuff. Come on, man.
In there. And I think one of my first times meeting you, we took Dr. Adams class together. That was G-Chem.
Yeah.
And it was at 8 a.m. And so, you know, we came in and I was like, why is this dude in a full sweat? You know, that was like my first time meeting. I was like, why is he sweating? You know, it's like, yo, oh, he is
coming straight
athlete.
From practice.
Right.
And coming I was straight from practice, man.
That takes some discipline, man, to get up and work out and still make the 8 a.m. and be engaged. It's not like you were just like there for, you know, we did have to swipe the cards, you know, our first year. But, you know, it's not like you were there for that. You get what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you were there to actually learn and stuff like that. And that's what really stood out to me. I was like, man, this dude is in a full sweat, still came to 8 a.m. And so I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, like, what am I doing? Like, why I'm struggling to get up for 8 a.m.? You know, I think it's that full circle moment.
Man, nah, that means a lot because, you know, and it's funny, you say that, and it's like I said earlier, you never know what kind of impact you have on somebody. Me, I'm just over here like, you know, probably 6 a.m., 5 a.m. practices or something, man. And I kid you not, it'd be like 7:40. Coach be like, oh, I got 8 a.m. Y'all go run to the calf and grab some food and go to class. And it's like this. We over here trying to make it get some breakfast because, you know, the 8 a.m. used to go for a little bit. You're going to miss breakfast.
Yeah. It was an interesting time, man. But I think that from that, I really learned to respect your process of like how you approach things. You know, you approached it like a lot of student athletes, like you, it's like you got to fight them to get in class sometimes. You know, you was there. I'm like, how is he in here? Like,
you ain't out of here, man. You ain't like, well, like I said, man, that really came down to like my mother, the things that she instilled in me. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, after my first semester, I was partying every week and everything. And I looked at my GPA and I said, this is not a representation of me. And I knew that, you know, I knew that. And I was like, I'm not about to play these games because, you know, it was always bigger. It was bigger than basketball for me. For me, basketball was a means for me to not have, for my family to not have to worry about paying for college. Mm. That was always my goal. I didn't have professional goals and all those things, but it was funny because I had like opportunities, but then I broke my foot. So I was like, well, I wanted to go to law school anyway. So, you know, and it worked out for me. It really did. Like, you know, I thank God every day, but I think it's just important that you, and when I talk to young brothers that are, you know, potentially thinking of going to Xavier or any school, I always tell them that, like, listen, you know, you got to move accordingly. Move with the thought that the ball will stop bouncing. And, you know, because that's the reality for most of us. The ball will stop bouncing one day. And what are you going to have after that? And it's either you could use basketball to give you more opportunities and open up doors. Because, man, listen, we got some of our athletes that came from Xavier, some of our XU Zula basketball players, they are doing amazing things. We got OBGYNs. We got
surgeons.
We got sports medicine surgeons. We got, you know what I'm saying? We got, I was with my boy, Mike, the other day, man. He's over here running big company. I'm not even going to disclose. But, you know, like, we got brothers out here doing it. Mm-hmm. We really do. And I don't want anyone to think otherwise. So, you know, and it's tough. It is tough. I mean, like you said, I was a full sweat 8 a.m. And I know, I remember being there and just sitting there because I sweat easily already. So I'm sitting there like, shit. And I just came from running whatever crazy miles. And now I'm sitting here trying to learn about some bio and, you know. Mm-hmm. But you make it work, man. And, you know, one thing I do appreciate about Xavier is, yeah, some professors that did not care. But, yeah, professors that really wanted to put in extra work with me because they knew what I was going through, like being an athlete and still trying to do what I was doing. And, you know, and I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. I really did. And also, honestly, my friends and like, you know, colleagues, like you guys, I mean, you guys were always like, if I asked a question, I said, hey, can you help me with this? People were always open to help.
Yeah.
You know, and I was always very appreciative of that.
Definitely. To segue the conversation a little bit, I feel like television and media in general sometimes gives us the perception that a lawyer is somebody that's confined to the courtroom. You know, we see a lot of judge shows, Life, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And enlighten us on the different career paths that you can embark upon, like once you have a JD, like the different fields of law.
So once you have your JD, so technically, let me break this down. So when you have your JD, that just means you graduated from law school. Not just means, but that means you graduated from law school. Once you take the bar, that's when you actually can practice law, meaning you could represent clients. So just to be clear, are you stating what happens like once you pass a bar or right. just when you get, okay, got you. Cause you know, it's a distinction that we know in our profession, but it's not really as known generally. So that's something I wanted to make clear. So once you pass your bar and everything, there's so many different things you can do. Now, and this is how I look at law. There's transactional and then there's litigation. Mm-hmm. So transactional is dealing with like mergers and acquisitions, helping companies, it's paperwork, right? You're writing a checklist to make sure your company that you're representing is able to buy out this one, or you're able to properly get bought out by another company, you know. And then there's litigation, which is what I do. And that's dealing with legal disputes that are often filed with the courtroom, in the courtroom. Now, 96% of every case filed does not go to trial. So a lot of cases are settled. A lot of cases are dismissed on many different stages of a matter. But so for me, like, I do litigation. I want to be in the courtroom more, but it's hard to be in the courtroom because a lot of litigation has to do with what's going on outside. Drafting, filing motions, we're going through discovery where we're trying to get documents from the other side and we're exchanging documents and all that. Like, a lot of it happens outside the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So the courtroom is honestly, to put it in layman's terms, the courtroom, that's the sexy stuff. Mm-hmm. That, of course, they're going to show on TV and all those things, because that's the stuff you want to see.
Right.
But it's very rare that you're going to see it as an attorney unless you really push to seek it. Because there's litigators, but then there's trial attorneys. I'm trying to be a trial attorney, where it's like, we're going to trial, we're going to take it to trial. I'm going to be in that courtroom, I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, then there's litigators, where it's like, a lot of people that are litigators, they like to not be in the courtroom, but they like to get things done in the paperwork aspect, in terms of like on the papers, is what they say. Meaning that they'll get a case dismissed off of the motion to dismiss, and boom, you saved your client, blah, 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 you're good. I want to be able to do both. Mm-hmm. But then there's a transactional side where you're dealing with, you represent a company, you guys want to buy out this company. So now you're going through the back and forth of figuring out how the contracts are going to line up, how you're going to acquire this company, how are you going to keep their employees, how are you going to take in their contracts and their obligations, and are you going to oblige by them and make sure that, you know, there's a whole checklist of things. And you know what would be great is I will connect you with some folks I know that are on the transactional side.
Okay.
Give you more of an in-depth conversation on that, because I'm not as well versed. But in addition to that, you become a general counsel, or you can work in-house. In-house means is you work for a corporation and within their legal department. Nice gig. I think I know Shanks does that a little. Okay. But that's what Shanks does. So, you know, definitely reach out to him and he'll give you some insight into that. And in addition to that, start your own firm. But then there's also a lot you can see. One thing about being an attorney, it gives you credibility, which is, I think that's invaluable. Now, of course, you always can screw up your own credibility, but off the rip, it gives you credibility. So I think it also helps you. So when I say that is, you know, you're talking to folks, and I never leave with like, oh, this is what I do. Like, I don't do it. But like, you know, eventually the conversation says, oh, what do you do? And you're like, I'm an attorney. People are like, oh. Like, there's a certain level of credibility that's given to you just being an attorney, that it allows people, you to, and how that looks is this. I think there's certain doors or certain people that are just more open to just meeting you because of what you do. You get what I'm saying? So it's like,
I agree.
Business owners, you know, or like, you know, just business owners, or like, you know, some people, you know, investors, things like that. Like, people that just, you know, it puts you in the rooms. It helps get you in the rooms, is essentially what I'm trying to say. And it gives you a level of credibility. Now, of course, you always can screw up your own credibility, but you can, you know, it's great to be able to expound or build upon that credibility. So one thing I like is seeing attorneys that are business owners. Because, like I said, you sit down at a table and you're negotiating something, folks are not, they're not trying to play around with you, but they know you're an attorney. So even though, yes, you have your own business, they also know you have that background. So there's a different level of just they're bringing to this conversation and understanding, which is something you can appreciate. And what else? So those are things, but I, you know, there's so many different things you can do with it, man. I mean, you could be a professor. Mm-hmm. a law professor if you want.
How did you decide on what you wanted to do?
Man, honestly, I knew big law was like, it's something about me, man. Don't tell me there's something I can't. Mm-hmm. But when you tell me it's like going to be really hard for me to obtain something, I'm going to push to get it. Yeah. And I think big law was one of those things they told me was like, it's going to be hard to get there from your school and da da da. And, you know, there's not many of us there. And I was like, well, no, I need to go. Mm-hmm. And what pushed me to want to be in big law is that I like dealing with disputes. Like, I like dealing with money disputes. And, you know, I'll deal with any claim in terms of, like, if you're a small LLC or even if you're just a person that wants to be represented by me. Like, you know, I'll take anything. But what I really like is when you're dealing with these big corporations or, like, these big, like, multi-million dollar disputes where it's, like, there's $250 million at dispute here. Mm-hmm. So this is huge, you know, like this is a huge deal or something. You know, I like being in the mix of those things because oftentimes those issues that you're dealing with are not simple. They never are. So it's one of those things that it keeps my mind churning. The work is continuously just, you know, racking my brain in regards to getting, you know, just figuring out these issues. And you often sometimes find gray areas in the law where it's like, this isn't something this is something I thought was like simple and should be a lot of precedent on, and they're not. So now you're trying to, you know, help kind of create some, like, you know, trying to see if the judge sees your way. And, you know, it's just, I enjoy that. You know, I think these big law firms also give you an ability to have an impact. I mean, when you have the backing of a law firm to do initiatives and things like that, I mean, you get money. You're able to have access to money to push for things. So I think that's very helpful in regards to when I'm trying to, you know, push diversity initiatives or, you know, do some things within the community. I think, you know, there's a good hand over fist thing going on there where it's like, no, I'm doing for you, but you're doing for me. But most importantly, man, I the reason why I'm in this is because I want to be able to open more doors for us down the line. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you catch me wavering on that, check me.
Okay. How does that look as far as, like, is that more mentorship? Is that more owning your own firm and having, you know, up and coming black attorneys come in and work there and building it that way, you know, how does that look for you?
So it's in both aspects. So essentially, I know I have to become a partner or maybe a name partner of a law firm, mm-hmm. where it's like I have a book of business that's so large that essentially I'm good. So, you know, any law firm in America will gladly have me be a part of their firm. So you have to get to the point where you're needed, you know, which is a very, very rare thing, mm-hmm. corporate America, where you're needed. And when you're at that point where you're needed, you know, people will go out their way to make sure the things you want are done. And that can be, there's a student looking for a position. Let's give them an offer. Mm-hmm. I don't want there to be questions around it. I want, off the strength of that phone call, that person has a job offer sent to their email. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to do things like that. You know, I want to be able to bring in more Black folks into what we do. Mm-hmm. Because we have some amazing litigators, transactional attorneys that we just need more access to being within this big law sphere. And, you know, I don't expect anyone else to do it for us. Hence why I think I need to be one of those people that continues to build that rapport, build the credibility, and get to the point where I can make a phone call and it will be answered. That's important. And that's why, a lot of things play. That's where we spoke about vertically and horizontally networking. All those things come into play because of mm-hmm. all of that.
So do you view your current position as a long-term career path or more of a developmental position for future goals, such as having your own law firm?
I view it as, right now, I do view it as a long-term career path because of the training aspect. You know, law school doesn't teach you how to be an attorney.
No.
Actually being out there and practicing does.
Right.
But one of the things, that's one of the things they didn't tell you. So, for, you know, right now, man, I'm in a great position where I'm being trained really well. And I'm working on every aspect of my development within the sphere, because essentially, I mean, it directly correlates with how I'm able to best represent the clients. And, you know, I want to be in a position to be able to be the best advocate for my clients, whether it's through drafting oral arguments or going to trial. I gotta be able to handle all of that. And, you know, so right now my focus is continuing to grow, continue to grow where I am now and just, you know, hone down on my skill sets and see where it goes from there.
Mm-hmm. With that being said, what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue law? Like, what kind of qualities, mindset, personality, what do they need that would equip them to be a good lawyer, in your opinion?
You have to be hungry, man. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be hungry. You can't get complacent. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, and you have to have perseverance, man. I mean, it's law school hazes you. Most professional schools, we all know that. But you know, it's a haze, man. I mean,
yeah.
It puts you through it. But you also have to always know your why. What I mean by that is, whatever your reason is for why you want to do law, don't lose sight of that as you go through this profession. Because sometimes folks will try to dictate your career for you. They'll try to, you know, tell you where they think you need to be versus where you know you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let them, you know, you're going to look up a couple of years from now and be like, damn, how did I get here?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important, especially for young African-American and a woman that want to be in this profession, that you are the driver of your vehicle when it comes to your career path. Also, this is important. I don't want to age myself, but let me say it. So I hope it doesn't come off wrong. But I'm saying this because it's important. Whatever you want to be, like in terms of social media, make that decision and stick to it. But don't be cognizant of what you're doing as well. So my thing is, you know, me, there's certain things I put out there and certain things that I want out there. You get what I'm saying? But, you know, especially for like the younger generation, man, sometimes you don't, there's certain things you just don't want. You know, I know, like, I may have aspirations to be a federal judge one day. I have to go before Congress if that happens. And they're going to pull up everything. They're going to pull up some things I didn't even know still existed, you know? And if you have those kind of aspirations, just be cognizant of it.
Yeah.
Now, you get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I'm one of those people that I'll post being out of drinking. I'll post having a good time. But, you know, because at the end of the day, I believe I'm 27 years old. I got a life.
You grown.
You know, and my career is another great point I got to make. Don't let your career define who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Please. Too many people do that, man. Your career does not define you. You are who you are. And you do this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So don't lose that. Because that's something that I can't stand seeing. Because, you know, I'm real big on that, you know. Like, I'm Wes. I'm Wesley first. But I practice law. You know, being an attorney doesn't define. It's a nice thing.
I think a lot of people say that, but I don't know if they practice it literally. You get what I'm saying? Like, I'm with you. They don't walk into a room their authentic self. They walk into a room as a lawyer, as a doctor. Like, they want people to know what they are because it gives them a sense of like social status once they walk into a room. I don't even tell people what I do, you know, because it gives me all of the leverage. Because you don't know who you're talking to.
You have
no clue. So I'm sitting there like, And I let them get it all out.
I let them get it all out. But I tell you, see, people don't realize, you and I are here, because I love the switch up, man. When when it comes up, so what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm an attorney.
Then they start to realize if they told you something that they over-exaggerated, and you know, because you do that for a living.
All good. Listen,
you know, and I think I learned early on that the leverage is not so much in what a person knows about you, is what they don't know about you.
Yeah.
It's the leverage. You know, so, you know, like I say, when I'm sitting down, I'm having a conversation with somebody, I'm gonna find out who you really are. Because if I come in and tell you I'm a doctor, whatever the case may be, your reaction to that is gonna be as if I'm a doctor. It's not gonna be as if I'm Jeremy. You get what I'm saying?
It's
not gonna be that. You're gonna automatically go into you're gonna go into your sophisticated bag. But your sophisticated bag isn't your true authentic self all the time. You know, you're not really like that. You know, sometimes I'm sitting there, I'm like, there's no way
they're
like this all the time. I'm like, like, I love it, though. I love it that you have that ability, you know, because you need that, too. You know, you need to be able to move in a room full of wolves and sharks. You need that, you know.
For sure. I agree 100%, brother. Like I said, like, I'd never lead with that. Because you know, I don't think it's a defining thing. I don't want, you know, listen. I want you to talk to me like I'm just Wes that you met. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I don't want you to talk to me like, oh no, this is because that's just not my MO. You know what I'm saying? And listen, man, like I said, that's the beauty of Xavier, man. The way I talk about that school, that boy's what he was doing, man. Like, there's a certain just power that comes from going to that school and being connected with so many people that just get it, man.
Yeah.
Get it.
And then too, I know, like, probably sometimes people look at your height and be like, oh, he a hooper. Yeah.
Oh yeah, man.
He a hooper, listen, but he's smart too. You know,
in Kansas City, bro. Apparently they call me I'm the attorney that look like a Chiefs player. I said, are you kidding me? I said, you gotta be kidding me, man. That's what it is, man. Oh,
that's a good one.
I was like, y'all got me, man. Y'all got me. But no, I get it. I mean, I'm a big guy. I know that. I got some stuff behind me, man. I do this for me. At the end of the day, I do this because it's something I want to do. I do it because it gives me the opportunity to do things for my family that I didn't get to do before. I mean, you know, I told you the story how I flew my sister out and we went to this event and all, like, you know, that moments like that bring me joy to be able to have the means to do something like that. Or I started a little investment account for my little brother who's 11, man. And like, you know, he's buying stocks and calling me like, hey, so, you know, what stock should I get next? Or, you know, like, listen, man, it's, for me, that's what it's about. It's about trying to just help create opportunities for my loved ones that, you know, I may have not even had at that age, or being able, you know, there's certain things that we as young professionals, like, we're a different generation than our parents, man. We have so much more knowledge. We have so much more wherewithal. We have more understanding of just things that, you know, and just constructs that exist and how we want to fight those. And then, you know, there's a power, there's a beauty and power that comes from that. And I think it's important that we continue to just push that on the younger generation. And that's what I'm trying to do with my little brother, my little sister, and them. And, you know,
Yeah, reach one, teach one. What's a motto that you live by?
Ah, man. It's really funny because I've been living by this for like a year and a half, but it is Larry June. I don't know if you know Larry June. He's a rapper.
Yeah, the artist.
I love him.
He remind me of Spitter.
Yeah, man. I love some Larry June, man. But you guys are going to laugh, but staying low-key and out the way, that is me. And sometimes folks are like, you don't do that. I'm like, I really do. I be in my, stay in my bubble. I do my thing. I pop out when I do. But honestly, like, I'm so focused on where I want to go, what I want to accomplish, that. And I'm just low-key and out the way, man. And I really do live by it. It's so, there's a couple lines that he has in particular. I actually got like one of his lyrics like up in my office in the firm, what else, man? What's another motto? Honestly, but something even on a more serious note, man, just be intentional. Mm-hmm. Being intentional, being at peace with what you do. I think that comes in many ways. So for me, I tell folks, man, life is naturally stressful. There's natural stresses that come from life. And every relationship, and I don't just mean like loving, like friendship, relationships are friendships, and you know, family, and then love, whatever. Everything has like a level of stress that just comes with just dealing with humans, right? But I think at the end of the day, do what you can to like limit unnecessary stress in your life. But we got a lot we going through already. And I think once you start realizing that and really putting your peace and your health first, your mental health first, man, the world becomes your oyster. Yeah. It really does. And I mean that, man, because, you know, as black professionals, we go through a lot. We go through a lot. And oftentimes we're always, like I said, pouring into others. But man, remember to pour into yourself. Mm-hmm. Remember that, man. And, you know, allow whatever brings you peace, do that. Do that. And don't live your 20s slaving away, man. Listen. I don't want to look, when I'm 40, when I'm 35, I don't want to look back on my 20s and be like, dang, I ain't do nothing. I ain't enjoy your life. We young professionals, man, while you can, enjoy this, man. Enjoy this time. Mm-hmm. Enjoy this time.
It's a limit, though. You know, because
there's a limit. No, there's a limit. You know, sometimes. You got to know that balance.
Yeah.
You got to know the balance. You got to be able to know how that balance. But I trust that my people have the wherewithal to figure that out. But what I'm going to say is, you know, don't get lost in your job.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I always keep something in mind that Drake said in a lyric one time. He said, you know, too worried about fashion, women in fashion, they go missing in action.
Yeah.
And you never notice they missing.
you never notice it, man.
And I think from that I learned that, you know, it is important to enjoy life, and it is important to have those moments which you can hold on to, because you don't want to live life with regrets and you don't get that time back. You know, a lot of people be like, you know, I'm going to relive, but you can't relive that moment because your 20s gone. Yeah. You know, that is what it is. But partying too much in your 20s, you know, your whole life could be messed up from just a 10-year period of not taking your life serious. You know, so going back on what you said about just being intentional, you know, is the most important thing, because when you're intentional, you know, this is what I need to do to be successful. This is what I don't need to do. This is what I need to do better, because you always have that mindset. I find that a lot of people, they're just, it's almost like they're floating. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they just aimlessly living life. It's just like, oh, well, what's your plans for next year? You know, whatever happens, happens. I'm like, that's going to be the story of your life. You keep on approaching it that way.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true, definitely, man. You got to you got to move with intention. Sorry, you got to move with intention, man.
Definitely.
You have to.
And man, but we certainly appreciate you for stopping by to the Liberators podcast, man, giving us so much game on just what it takes to be an attorney, the mindset that it takes, and also, you know, the importance of giving back and wanting to give back and the need for that. Did you have any closing thoughts or anything like that that you feel like?
Yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you guys something, man. Listen, anyone that's out there thinking of doing this, if I could do it, you can do it. That's one. And two, at minimum, like the hard work, you got to put in the work. That's at minimum. After that, build upon yourself, man. Build upon yourself. But, you know, if anyone ever wants to reach out to me, feel free. My personal email is wphilip1234@yahoo.com. So that's wphilip1234@yahoo.com. Also, my Instagram's public, so feel free to reach out. I mean, I'm wes.s.esq. And, you know, send me a message if you ever want to connect, if you ever want to just talk. You know, I'm here. I'm available. If I'm not at the time, I'll figure out a time to make something happen. But I'm available. And as always, man, just keep working on yourselves. Keep put yourself first, put your mental health first, but also be intentional with how you're moving. And, you know, if you have a goal, don't lose sight of it, and don't lose sight of that desire that pushes you.
Definitely, man. That's some free game for everybody, man, out there. Listen,
it's only free, man. You got to listen. We got to hear it from each other.
Absolutely. And we thank everybody for tuning in to another episode of the Liberators Podcast. If you're still here, you're enjoying the Liberators Podcast. We ask that you would share and rate us on your favorite listening platform. Also, follow us on Instagram at the Liberators Podcast. If you would like to support the development of this podcast financially, please follow the support link from Anchor in the show notes. Thank you for your time. Stay liberated. From yours truly, your host, Jeremy Shropshire.